I declare the meeting open at 5:30 PM. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Could I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. Could I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 9 reports of management, none of which are confidential. We have received no apologies. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act 1989, in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on the council to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 26, held on Tuesday the 10th of December 2013? Move. Thank you, Councillor Wood. Seconded, Councillor Ong. I'll put that matter to the vote. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? In that case, in accordance with the Council resolution of the 26th of March 2013, we set aside a 15-minute period to allow members of the public to ask questions of us. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. I invite questions from members of the public. Would you please raise your hand if you would like to ask a question and state your full name? Gentleman here.
George Schlatz, my name.
Come up, George.
I don't normally do this, but I thought I'll ask a few little questions. All right, my name's George Chalakis. I currently run a laboratory on 140 Queen Street in Melbourne. I've been a tenant there for 14 years and been running that business manufacturing crowns for 14 years. Now, what's been going on at 150 Queen Street is what's been affecting my business. Is they're currently putting up, or they've put up, a crane, and just with the vibration and the construction of that crane next door, there's no separation between the two buildings, and what's happening is we're getting major vibration through
our... George, you have to ask us a question.
Yeah, so the question
I know
is...
you're getting to it, yep.
How did you allow the permit to go through for a 77-level tower at 150 Queen Street with no setbacks? Secondly, was this building approved by the current planning minister? And third, what position did the city take at the time, and what options do I have?
I might refer that to our Chair of Planning in the first instance, and then perhaps Jeff Law, our Director of Planning. Councillor Rowe.
Thanks, George. I did receive your email the other day and spoke to officers. That building's called Tower Melbourne, or it's marketed as Tower Melbourne. It was approved by the Minister around August or September 2012, or prior to that. And Council really didn't have an input on that time, and we publicly then... objected to it and made a criticism on the design of the building with no setbacks and in the wrong location and not respectful of the neighbours like yourselves. I understand that building 140 Queen Street has now taken the case and put an injunction on further construction work because of what you were just describing, and officers can probably describe a bit more what's the next step in that.
Jeff or Angela, do you want to comment? I think we need to be a bit careful before a tribunal at the moment. Angela, are you happy to answer?
In terms of the...
Yeah, all right, just relax.
Would you like me to sit down?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind. Thanks, George.
In relation to the concerns about vibration causing damage to the adjoining property, it's a matter between the registered building surveyor who issued the building permit and the construction company. We can certainly provide the gentleman with some advice about the process and procedure, but there are other processes underway at the moment.
So I think, George, in short, the answer is if you would like to... engage in further dialogue with the City of Melbourne about how we might be able to help you and support you, we're happy to do so. We can't support legal action that's being taken separately, but we can offer you advice within our powers to help you in your cause. and I'd invite you to, you know, maybe touch base with Angela, who's our manager of planning, in order to continue that conversation offline. I hope that's okay.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Sorry, who else was there? Sorry, lady down the back.
Hi, my name's Rebecca Leslie. I'm a member of Save the Palace Committee. Now, our understanding is that whilst the application for the Palace Theatre was denied by the state government, there's been a new application lodged, and it's now in the decision-making hands of the City Council because of its size. When we attended the meeting back in November, the City Council meeting, there was... we asked for a moratorium to be placed on decisions made around the Burke Hill precinct because of the review that was supposed to be conducted about approval for plans there. So my question is, when is the actual Burke Hill review going to be conducted? Is there actually like a decision made about the timing around that? The building...
Is that your question?
I've got three questions, actually, so okay. Can I ask?
You've got 90 seconds, yes. Remember.
The palace is currently being reviewed by the Heritage Council of Victoria, and that review, its decision's not meant to be made until the end of May. So will that affect the decisions made by the actual council with regard to this new application? And has the council actually considered asking the minister for an internal heritage control until such time that review is actually conducted and complete?
We haven't asked for an internal heritage control, as far as I understand, mm-hmm. and in fact, internal heritage controls have been rejected in the past. Mm-hmm. Secondly, there is no matter... No, hang on, Ken. There is no matter before council. We don't divulge what goes on in sort of internal, you know, sort of applications, but there's nothing before council. And when that comes, it will come, and then you'll be perfectly free. As far as I'm concerned, as Lord Mayor... That application was rejected by the minister. I have no further information on any other applications to us. They may or may not come, but I'm not going to speculate on something that's not even before us as a council.
There is one that's actually, it was lodged last week, and it's
right,
actually...
Right, but yeah. That may or may not be the case.
Yeah.
But you know, nothing has been put before us.
Yes.
And anything that is lodged has the perfect right to work its way through the system
yeah.
as it will.
Sure.
But there's nothing before us at the moment.
Okay. And the actual Burke Hill Precinct review, is there
The Burke Hill Precinct review is a ministerial review, and it's around height limits, and we're doing one on, and I can't recall, Jeff, can you remind me, what are we doing something on the Burke Hill Precinct?
Yes, it was a notice of motion.
It's a notice of motion. It's
mm-hmm.
not... Go ahead, yeah.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. So the council did agree that it would scope and cost a review for potential work in 2014-15. However, since then, Plan Melbourne has come out, as I'm sure you're aware, and the minister has expressed very similar interests in the Burke Hill Precinct review, including making some of the discretionary height limits mandatory is one thing that he's looking at the moment. But the scope of the heritage review beyond height limits is something that our officers and the officers at DTPLI are currently negotiating, and we will have to make a decision in coming weeks as to what council's role will be in 2014-15 vis-a-vis the minister's role. The minister's going to do something, we just don't know the full scope of it. And Jeff, I don't think I've said anything wrong there, but
no.
Yeah.
And therefore we're kind of in the hands of the minister mm-hmm. to work out what he wants to do. And then we'll make a decision about whether we think that goes far enough, it's comprehensive, we need to go further. But until he decides that, we are kind of in limbo.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you. In that case, as at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with our conduct of meetings local law 2010. In relation to agenda item 6.1, the Planning Scheme Amendment C198, City North Heritage Review, request to speak from Dr. John Price, Anthony Vanderkratz, Paul Baggio, and Tristan Davies, and an item of correspondence from Saul Saritsky. In relation to agenda item 6.2, an application for a planning permit for 433 to 445 Collins Street, a request to speak from Tristan Davies. In relation to agenda item 6.9, the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Project Update, request to speak from Dr. John Price and Anthony Vanderkratz. Is there anybody here who would like to speak to any item on the agenda tonight that I haven't read out? You're more than welcome to do so. Thank you. I just advise the members, you do have 3 minutes to address the committee. We do adhere to the three-minute time limit. I presume we're sounding a bell in an elegant and technologically advanced way at 2 minutes, and then again at 3 minutes to signal that your time has concluded. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes the decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Could I now call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There are 2 reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio tonight. The first item, agenda item 6.1, it's the planning scheme amendment C198 for City North Heritage Review. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item?
Yes,
please. David? Mr. Mays?
Apologies, Chair, I haven't prepared any visual presentation.
Sure.
This is Amendment C198 has been out to exhibition. Submissions have been received, and the report in front of you is a report on those submissions and proposed amendments to the planning scheme amendment to be put before a panel with a recommended resolution to request the minister appoint a panel to consider the submissions, to consider the amendment, and the recommended changes to that amendment. The attachment, probably the key attachment, is the attachment 4, which is a summary of the changes to the amendment documents that have come out of the submissions. And in attachment 2, there is a summary of the submissions that have been made and the management's response to those, which have led to the recommended changes to the amendment.
Councillor Leppert, do you have any questions? No. Thank you, Mr. Mace. I now call on Dr. John Price, who has requested to speak. And Dr. Price, you have 3 minutes, two minutes.
Some pictures. Have a look at. I'm concentrating on Heritage Overlay 7 over the Victoria Market, which the councillors see here. Now, when you approved this document to go out for circulation in March, Heritage Overlay 7 was untouched. During the year, for some reason, next slide, a part of it was excluded, excised. This is indicated by this circle here. This triangular area was excised. So the question, why is it being excised, comes up. Now, I and several other people and shoppers and residents, I suppose you would describe them as, have made an objection to this excision, and as did the National Trust of Australia. The a consultant has responded to say that there is no heritage object in that triangle. That is correct. There is no heritage object in the triangle, but Heritage Overlay 7 nevertheless provides protections to that triangle which are of importance to the council and to the future of the market. Let us have a look at the next picture. A height limit of 20 metres exists in Heritage Overlay 7. It was defended successfully by the City of Melbourne in VCAT 529 in 2012. It was actually finished in 2013. A long case. The City of Melbourne argued very strongly that the 20-metre height limit should be retained in Heritage Overlay 7. So the question of the excision now revolves around whether the council's given up on having a 20-metre height limit in this area and doesn't want it anymore, or whether there's some other reason why it should no longer be heritage. Of course, even if it is Heritage Overlay 7, you can still build new buildings in it and you can still do other things. That's not the critical issues of Heritage Overlay 7, but the 20-metre height limit was defended by the City of Melbourne. Okay, let's just have a quick look at the area. Next slide. You'll see it lies south of the yellow buildings, which are the sole remnant of the wholesale market built in 1922. The area is now occupied, as I said, it contains no heritage objects. It contains a surface car park. Next picture. This is the picture looking from William Street up towards those buildings. There's the triangle very clearly portrayed. And you will see that it represents the entrance to the market for people coming from the Flagstaff Gardens tube station, I've always said. Perhaps we're going to get one eventually. William Street trams and the Lonsdale Street trams. Have I finished?
So yes. Thank you, Mr. Dr. Price. Any questions for the speaker? No. You may sit down. You may sit down.
I think my brief answer would be that you're quite right. There is no heritage object in that triangle. It's a ratty piece of ragtag car park.
It's not a question and answer session.
It's not a question and answer.
Dr. Price, you may take your seat, and I'll go to the next speaker now. I now call Anthony Vandercrats, who has also requested to speak. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. I should point out, first of all, that any heritage classification is not an award. It is merely a planning and development control to help guide the City of Melbourne in future development. One of the proposals that is subject to this site that the amendment takes relation to is the Queen Victoria Market, and it has been suggested that the market may be a candidate for World Heritage. It concerns me that not enough has been indicated in this amendment in regards to the proposed amendment or listing in World Heritage. I'm a bit concerned that we're going to repeat the mistakes of the past, as we did with the Museum and Federation Square development, when the Kennett government went ahead with a development plan and then later on it was up to a Labor government to put in place a World Heritage listing over the Royal Exhibition buildings. If the Queen Victoria Market, and I think it is a significant building, but if it does merit World Heritage listing, surely it would be appropriate for the City of Melbourne to apply for World Heritage listing now, prior to any proposed development plans that are being put forward,
Anthony,
and that those listings should be placed.
We can't.
Well, you
can. Need to. No, you can't.
I can, having investigated the criteria, you're taking up my 3 minutes. Having investigated and being
involved.
No, you're
doing a pretty good job of that yourself.
Having been involved in the World Heritage listing of the Royal Exhibition buildings, the City of Melbourne certainly can make an application to the federal government to start putting the building in its existing place under World Heritage listing. It is part of its responsibility as one of the planning authorities related to the
question?
Site and the owner. Well, my concern is what is stopping...
No, what is your question?
It's not question time. I'm making a submission. My concern is that the City of Melbourne should be preparing documents relating to the significance of the Queen Victoria Market, and it should be then putting forward submissions to the federal government in order to have it placed on the World Heritage listing now, so that any future development of this site would be taken into account under the UNESCO requirements. This, I think, is pretty significant. Otherwise, we'll find a repeat of the events of the late the 1990s, when the Kennett government pushed ahead with a museum development and in the process came close to compromising the significance of the Royal Exhibition buildings. It was a planning mistake. It was one that ideally should not be repeated. I will touch upon this issue and a further other issues later on in the agenda, which concerns the proposed development of the Queen Victoria Hospital site. But I again urge the council to start preparing its documentation for the World Heritage listing if it believes it is of a significance that warrants World Heritage listing. Personally, I don't see the merit in this particular building for World Heritage listing. Again, I repeat, heritage listing and heritage controls are not an award. They are things that are put in place in order to protect and preserve those heritage aspects that concern Melbourne.
Thank you, Mr. Vandercrats. I now call on Paul Baggio, who also requested to address the committee. Is Mr. Baggio here? No, Mr. Baggio is not here, so I go to Tristan Davis. Tristan, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Presentation starting now. Thanks for letting me speak. I just wanted to firstly congratulate the council overall on this amendment. It's a really positive step, looking at post-war industrial heritage particularly. mainly focusing on the CBD for us. And special mention for the first time of laneway facades is really great to see as well. Thanks for including our suggestion of the laneway building, which will now have a heritage grading. So it's great that you've looked at our submission in that way. And also great that the Elizabeth Street precinct will be protected now. Unfortunately, can I have the next slide, please? Unfortunately, too late to save buildings like 57A Beckett Street, which has slipped through the cracks and will now be demolished. It's also unfortunate, in our opinion, that Little La Trobe Street wasn't within the scope of the review, and also Literature Lane, which the Lord Mayor himself was present in renaming, but which still doesn't have any protection on its character, buildings, or bluestone paving. Could I have the third slide, please? So overall, yep, we're just here to welcome the amendment, and we hope it's a precursor to more detailed studies of laneways in particular in the CBD, which have been overlooked by previous heritage studies far too much, and the buildings inside them, and also post-war and post-modern heritage when particular buildings within those styles are considered heritage. So, yeah, we're looking forward to more of that in the future from the City Council. Finally, it's a shame to see the TAA building, which is a post-war landmark in the study, is getting heritage protected now, but at the same time, a more important post-war building, which we'll talk about later, is under threat of demolition. So at the same time, you're protecting one, but then allowing potentially one to be demolished. So it's unfortunate there's that inconsistency there. So that's just a short sort of presentation for this one. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Tristan. You may take a seat. Is Mr. Paul Baggio in this room at all? He just came in? Yes, you requested an opportunity to speak. You have 3 minutes, and 2 minutes, after 2 minutes, the bell will ring and you can wind up then.
Thank you very much. Definitely don't have any PowerPoint presentation, but generally this relates to property on the corner, or property 106 to 108 Peel Street. I have got some photos, but particularly we just made these properties weren't previously. Firstly, this is the first time I've done this, so I'll just make an acknowledgement. I'm not a professional speaker and definitely not a professional planning consultant. But I guess just trying to understand what is the intention, the properties ourselves, 106 and 108, buildings which we feel don't have any particular value to the from a heritage perspective. We're just trying to understand what the current zoning is providing. Do you mind if I come forward and just show you some pictures? Yep, thanks. I guess from our perspective, yeah, these have been currently claimed as a D rating, or the lowest level of heritage overlay. We believe that doesn't really add any value, and we're just looking to see if that could be reverted back to its previous title. Okay. Thank you.
Take that as a question. You want to know, yeah, why have we done it, and can it be reversed?
Yes.
Jeff, do you want to address that? Or David, do you want to do it?
Lord Mayor, councillors, I might ask David Mays to address the specific property, but I guess in general terms, the decision that is before you tonight is whether to refer these matters to an independent panel to look at all of these matters in some detail. And if you were to accept that recommendation, then Mr. Baggio and his colleagues would have that opportunity to have the case tested. From my looking very quickly at what's in the report and its 106 to 110 Peel Street is referred to on page 18 of 23.
It's number 27.
And, yeah. And it appears from the considerations that both Council's heritage consultants and officers have made is that these buildings make a contribution to the historic environment of a particular area without having an individual grading in their own right. So should that proceed through to becoming part of a heritage overlay in the planning scheme, then the intention of the planning scheme would seek to conserve those buildings in the first instance, but if that becomes impossible, then it would seek whatever replaced it to be sympathetic to the existing area.
Could I ask you, Jeff, this seems from the report to be one that sort of just falls over the line from ungraded to D.
I can't speak specifically, but from what I read in terms of the management comments, that's probably right, and it is part of a context rather than of special interest in its own right.
And again, I think our view would be that if Ball were to make exactly the same submission with the same reasons to the panel, it may well be moved back out of grading.
I can't predict what would happen, but that's the purpose of the panel, is to consider the pros and cons of all these matters and provide advice back to you.
Thank you. Paul, are you happy with that? Thank you.
Thank you to the speakers. In that case, I'm happy to move the motion that's been recommended by management. Change to item three now? Seconded by Councillor Leppard. I'll quickly say a few words to this and before I refer to the seconder. First of all, I'd like to thank all the submitters and also the speakers who come in and all the submitters that have written in with their inputs. It's very interesting reading, and also some of them actually engage a heritage advisor, Bryce Raworth. To have assist them with their comments and also assist them with the submission. I'd like to thank management for putting together a report and also going through all the responses, because the report itself is reasonably large. So, and it is on the website, and those who submit us have actually looked at it and identified the impact on themselves. So they've taken that opportunity to write into us. And I can also see that our concerns raised, that some of the properties affected, the proposed gradings on some of these buildings can limit, or they're perceived to limit, the opportunity for them to develop, which the report says it doesn't mean that you can't develop, it's just there are controls with the overlay, with the heights, with heritage and all that. So you can develop within specific conditions and the requirements of the planning scheme. I think that needs to be clear, because some of the submissions are basically saying that it has the impact of some of these gradings and proposals are actually going to curtail the development opportunities. My only view is that it does not, but it does mean that there is not a possibility or this idea of having unlimited development potential on these sites, which is quite a common term used nowadays. I'd just like to reiterate what's been said. Every property owner who is impacted by this has another opportunity to go to panel, put your case forward, because we are not here tonight to make changes to the report. We are here tonight to agree or not agree to pass it on, to send it off to panel and ask the minister to appoint the panel. So I hope that those of you who still have concerns take their next opportunity when the panel is appointed. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to add my thanks to officers for the huge amount of work that's gone into this to date. Obviously, there's a long way to go. Thank you to all of the submitters, those of us who are here, but also those who wrote in. Councillor Rong, you're quite right. All we're doing today is deciding to send this to the panel for further submission. I always respect the right of Council to make amendments to the planning scheme, amendments that is proposed pre-exhibition at this stage. I don't have any reason to do that right now. On the issue of 106 to 110 Peel Street, I'm open to all arguments, but I would like to see an extra opinion added into the mix before it comes back to us, and that's what the panel would do. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of that. One point of interest is the Melford Motors and Carlton tram substation. Those two small overlays there. It goes to how subjective heritage can be, I suppose, because they're already listed, but because of an oversight, the independent assessor who went and did the heritage study came at a completely different conclusion as to the heritage value of those two buildings and recommended a C listing, but because of they were already listed, we're making a small change here tonight. Well, officers have recommended a small change, I beg your pardon, to change those from C to A. So I think it demonstrates well how heritage can always be quite a subjective matter, but I'm glad to see that we've made that small change there. Just briefly on the issue of World Heritage listing for the Queen Victoria Market. Yes, obviously we've answered this question before. It's not relevant to the question before us tonight, and I'm sure, Mr. Van der Kratz, you know that. You're often pointing us to sections of the Act or policies which talks about what we should and shouldn't be doing. All we can do tonight under Sections 22 and 23 of the Planning and Environment Act is decide whether or not to send this to panel, to decide whether or not to make an amendment, and matters about the listing of the QVM, World Heritage listing, is matters for forums other than this one. It's well outside of scope, but of course that question has already been answered last year. On the whole, very happy to let this amendment proceed and see what happens after panel.
Would any other councillors like to speak for the motion? Yes, Councillor Oak.
Well, just briefly, I support the recommendation and then also thank officers for not only preparing the amendment but also receiving and responding to the submissions. I thank the speakers as well. I think that whilst we've already pointed out that the opportunity is at the panel stage to raise those issues again, and they have been addressed in the responses from officers, I think it is good to bring them forward and make us aware of issues that are of particular interest to our constituents. And so when it comes back, we'll be interested to see what the independent panel makes of those issues. And I know I will. So anyway, I commend the amendment and we'll see how it goes in the next stage of the planning process.
Would any councillors like to speak against the motion? In that case, I will just close off quickly. I support what my fellow councillors have said. No, we're just pushing this, moving this to the minister to make a decision to appoint a panel. Because if we continue to delay this, that means that some buildings in there will actually be unprotected for a lot longer. And that's not what we want to see with this process. And I just like to now put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. We have a unanimous vote. I declare the motion carried. The next item, Lord Mayor, I'd just like to declare a bit of a conflict here and like to hand it over to my deputy.
Are you going to partially withdraw?
It is after talking to Manager of Governance, because on this particular...
You either declare it or you don't, Councillor.
I declare a conflict, and to explain that it's a comment that I made in the Age last week, which puts me in a perceived bias position.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. That's right. Yeah, it's a very long room. So run. Okay, well, this is agenda item 6.2, application for a planning permit TP 2013227 at 433 to 455 Collins Street, Melbourne. And I'd like to begin by calling on Angela Meinke, Manager of Planning and Building, to make a brief presentation on this item. Unless Martin would like to do it. No, Angela.
Thank you, councillors. This application, The subject site is located on the southern side of Collins Street, bounded by Collins, Williams Street, Flinders Lane and Market Streets. The next couple of slides show you some photos which we've taken just recently of the building in its current condition. Collins and Market Street, Flinders Lane and Market Street, William and Market Streets, and Collins and Williams Streets. In January 2012, a number of the panels of the existing building balconies, marble panels, fell to the ground, which necessitated the closing off of a number of the streets. And in the photograph on the left there, William and Market Streets, you can see some cladding that has been applied to prevent any of the panels further dropping to the ground. By doing those, undertaking those works, it meant that William Street could be reopened. Prior to that, we had quite a significant portion of the street blocked off to general access. The forecourt, which you can see in the photograph on the right, is still closed off at the moment because the remainder of the building hasn't had the temporary or longer-term solution applied. And the same applies in Market Street, where a significant proportion of Market Street is currently closed as well. The cost to undertake those works that we can see on that right-hand portion of the building was in the order of $2.2 million. And you can see a close-up there of the cladding which has been applied. The site is zoned Capital City. It's affected by design and development overlays, active street frontages and weather protection, and parking overlay number one. The application before you is proposing the demolition of the existing building, both the main office building and the basement levels. It's proposed to undertake those works in two stages. The first stage is anticipated to take approximately 12 months, and that will remove the office building to the ground level. Removal of the hoarding and reopening of the site for our interim public use. That's the front open space of the plaza. The second stage is anticipated to take 2 months, and that's the further demolition of the ground and basement levels, which will then enable the redevelopment of the site to commence. And that, or the approval of a redevelopment proposal, is yet to be sought and naturally granted. The plan here shows us in elevation, in cross-section, the two stages which are proposed for the demolition. And in terms of where we currently are with the future development of the site, after an extensive period of discussions with the previous owners of the site, the ownership transferred to CBUS, who have come to council now with a revised vision for the redevelopment of the site. They've indicated that they would like to develop it for a mixed-use project. They have sought an expression of interest from a number of architectural practices for the replacement building, and recently announced that that's been shortlisted to the four companies, four consortiums, which are shown on the screen. And council officers have asked whether it's possible to have a representative on that design panel when that process progresses. And that's where we're at the present time.
Thanks, Angela. Any questions for Angela? Okay, thank you. Oh, you've got more, sorry.
We were requested today and present here an additional slide which shows the existing building and the front forecourt area. In the recommended officers' conditions is a Section 173 agreement seeking some surety about the long-term access for the public to that front forecourt area. And we've recreated that here, showing that we would like to see the public open space to be provided with a frontage to Collins Street so that it reads as a public open space where the public can feel welcome, as they have been in the past, to enter the site and use it for passive recreation, that it be provided at a grade level, that the proportions of the space are appropriate for public open space, that we don't have an end design where we have very narrow corridors which really are just transitionary spaces. And we're concerned to make sure that whatever the design of the building is, that there are comfortable wind conditions so that someone sitting in that space having their lunch, for example, can do so without being blown away. And that's represented here on this plan.
Okay. Thanks, Angela. No questions? Okay. I now call on Tristan Davies, who's requested the opportunity to speak. Tristan, just a maximum of 3 minutes.
Thanks again. I think I forgot to mention the previous thing. I'm representing Melbourne Heritage Action, as some of you might know already. So I just wanted to speak for a few minutes because basically we're concerned that the demolition hasn't been proven to be absolutely essential for a building which only a year and a half ago Melbourne councillors voted to give heritage protection, which unfortunately has been stalled by the planning minister. So could I have the second slide, please? That was an original photo by Wolfgang Sievers of the building. Here you see a few building photos we have from a few years ago, with the building in better condition with the marble and the gold tiling, which presented quite an attractive building. Obviously, it's not in that state now, unfortunately. And we don't know exactly, you know, how bad the damage is now. But obviously, we haven't seen enough demonstration that restoration is completely impossible for a building which really should have been heritage listed by now, according to a number of studies. We don't believe there's enough evidence that's impossible. Similar excuses like this were used to demolish a lot of Victorian era office buildings, for instance, not enough space, not enough adaptability, materials falling off, but obviously we now regret losing a lot of those buildings. Could I have the next slide, please? There you see obviously the Argus building, which was in a similar state of disrepair, possibly worse, for decades. And only just now, it was heritage listed in the same process that the National Mutual Building was supposed to be listed in. And as you can see, it's finally being properly restored and being used in a way that's economically viable and has led to restoration. We don't see why the idea of this happening with National Mutual is not also impossible. So could I have the next slide, please? And there you just see a few more buildings, which the minister also stepped in and rejected, that were in the panel from various post-war styles. So we'd like to just ask the council if they have any indication of when these buildings are going to be properly looked at by the planning minister. He said there's been a review, but we've heard nothing so far. So we don't want them to all follow in the same path as this building not being protected when the heritage considerations should have been looked at least in some part, no matter what the outcome of that. And just the final slide, please. You just see more post-war buildings in the city which we believe could possibly have heritage significance. We just like to, call on council to look at this in the future and make sure that more post-war buildings that might be considered valuable in the future aren't lost to us through similar, circumstances such as National Mutual. I guess that's it.
Thanks, Tristan. Any questions for Tristan? Okay, thanks very much, Tristan.
Thank you.
I now call on a councillor to move a motion.
Sorry,
before that. Is it too late
for me to ask a question of the officers? No. I'm wondering if I could have some further explanation. Is it the case, as the speaker mentioned, that we thought this was a valuable building until recently?
The building was nominated for heritage protection and was going through that process of a panel hearing with a decision to be a recommendation by the panel for council then to consider whether heritage heritage overlay should be applied. We're still waiting for the Minister to make that recommendation. In the meanwhile, we've had serious building defects which resulted in the catastrophic falling of a number of panels from the building. And as part of the process that we went through, the Municipal Building Surveyor issued an emergency order which resulted in the surrounding area being blocked off from pedestrians. And we asked the applicant, or the building owner, to provide us with evidence about what could be done to keep the building. And the information that we've been provided with and which we've gone through quite rigorously shows that the panels that were applied were applied in quite an experimental way. They used a number of different construction techniques, and across the building a significant proportion of them are shown to be defective and of need of work. So temporary bracing has been put in place that we see presently to hold them all on to the existing building pending a decision on this application.
Thank you. And so if I might, and a follow-up question, you'll see, essentially it's beyond rescuing this building, in your view? Or is it just a question of further research and more money?
The works that we've seen is the temporary measure to fix the western portion of the building. Those panels were in the order of $2.2 million. To extend that across the entire building as a means of longer-term retention of the building will impact upon the way in which the building looks. It's also a very expensive process to do. We've also had our engineers look at the existing building, and the method of construction is such that it's not easy to convert that building in its current form into something else which has alternative uses. They use a tension system to build each of the floor plates, and to cut any penetrations into them is effectively not possible to do. And in fact, to pull the building down is quite an extensive and difficult task because of the method of construction.
Thank you.
Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. Angela, the last briefing the Council's got on the deferral of C186 and all of the post-war buildings was that we just don't know when the Minister's going to pick that up again. So just a bit more detail on the previous answer. Have we heard anything more detailed than that, or are we completely in the dark on as to when he might pick this up again?
I've heard nothing further.
Okay.
I'm completely in the dark.
And I've got a couple of questions on the details of the conditions attached to the permit we're being asked to approve here. But before I do that, Chair, are you aware of alternative motions that might prevent some of that? Okay.
Have a question from
Can I just request that we have an opportunity to ask questions before that's moved, then, if we can just have a quick look at it?
All right, well, we need to continue questions now, then. So, Deputy Lord Mayor?
Angela, I just would like to clarify, the building would be full of asbestos because of the age of the building and very unsafe.
My understanding is, yes, there is asbestos in the building, but that it's not unsafe as it presently is.
Thank you.
Councillor Leppett?
Could we possibly just have a scroll down and see what the alternative is going to be? That will cut down my list of questions, Chair. I'm trying to save us all time.
All right.
Outstanding work.
Okay, unusual, I know, but...
I'm happy to foreshadow that I might be prepared to move a motion which would have a change in wording to 3A, as it is recommended to us, if we could have...
Well, I'll start with a question that's not relevant to what's going to come up there, and I think I've only got one I'll pad. The condition three is all about the signing of the Section 173 agreement. It doesn't say anywhere in there that it has to be signed with the detail to the satisfaction of the responsible authority. And so is condition three open to challenge at tribunal if the applicant says that they have satisfied parts A, B, and C, but we would like them to do more. I mean, I just want to know how open to challenge it is, because we don't have any language in there that says that that officers can sign can have to be satisfied before the agreement is signed.
The condition would require council to enter into that agreement, which sets out at conditions A, B, or parts A, B, and C, three requirements that once the agreement has been entered into, must continue to be done to the satisfaction of council. If there's dispute about whether something is being done to our satisfaction or not, there is the possibility to have that referred to the tribunal for discussion. But essentially, it is a private agreement between the landowner and the City of Melbourne.
Just following on from that, then, given that under CCs in the CCZ, generally we don't issue permits for demolition without at the same time approving plans for redevelopment, we've got the whip hand in this case. We can and very easily be as prescriptive as we want to be in the Section 173 agreement condition here. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I'll wait now until we can see what the amended 3A is going to look like. Thanks, Chair.
All right, we're almost there. Anyone else want to ask a question?
The wording's the same, just with an extra sentence.
Angelo, is it right to say this would be the largest demolition in the city since gas and fuel? Has there been anything bigger than this?
We had the Emporium site, which is probably a bit bigger.
Anyone filibustering? Do you know what the weather's going to be tomorrow, Angela?
It's a sentence and a half. And also, Angela, the map that you provided before becomes a part of that, does it not?
Of your alternative?
Yes.
Yes.
Just can I have the paper back, please, so that I can assure? I'm happy to move that with the corollary that the diagram that is referred to there is also included in the amendment, because you don't have the diagram. So where is that going to be taken in? Angela? Or Jeff?
At the end of that sentence, we could add as included in this document or as attached to this agreement.
As attached to this agreement?
As attached to this
agreement. Could you add that to the end of it, please? And could you also now, in Angela's presentation, scroll back? So that's the wording. So it actually says we are going to specifically add this bit, and it's the earlier diagram that Angela showed us. Can you scroll back to Angela's presentation where she had a map in green of the area? Keep going forward.
No, the additional slide. Yes.
That's it. So that would be the attachment that goes as a slide at the end, the diagram that's referred to.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. You don't need as attached to this agreement because we haven't attached it to the agreement, just as tabled.
Shown in green.
Just as tabled, it's fine. So that's the document. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Councillor Leppett, you can ask a question.
Okay, thank you. So given that we can be prescriptive here because of the way the CCZ works, and there's no particular danger here in not being prescriptive, is the term there generally leaving us open to challenge a tribunal? Can we be more prescriptive than that? Should we?
I would recommend the use of the word generally so that, because we don't know what the end development's going to look like, it may be that as a result of the design competition that we end up with a building that's perhaps organic in shape, slightly different than the existing rectangular building that we see today. And that gives us some... it does give us some breadth to consider an alternative location.
Chair, given that the heritage value of the building at the moment is all to do with the meeting of the vertical built form at the flat open space at Grade on Collins Street, would we not seek here, I accept that the answer might be no, but could we not seek here to duplicate that, to build that into the future development? Is that desirable? Is that undesirable? I mean, that is why it's currently... That's why the council currently tried to get it protected in the heritage overlay.
You should use the microphone, please.
Lord Mayor, Chair, Councillor... if I could just backtrack a bit. The conditions on the permit that you're considering issuing are subject to challenge at the tribunal by the applicant, nobody else, by the applicant. So firstly, the requirement for an agreement is capable of being challenged. If it is impossible to achieve agreement, that is also capable of being referred to the tribunal. Now, the indications are from the discussions with the proponents that is unlikely, but that is possible. So you can be as prescriptive as you wish to be, however, that is subject to challenge. So our advice to you, or Angela's advice to you, is this form of words keeps open the negotiation that is going to be necessary to successfully conclude an agreement. In relation to the question about the future development, the likelihood is, because of the division of responsible authority within the Melbourne Planning Scheme, that the future development will be a decision by the Minister for Planning under the current rules. That will effectively be a separate permit application. You can, through this mechanism of a Section 173 agreement, you can bind the use of the land that the agreement applies to, but you can't bind the conditions of a further planning permit application. So essentially what this recommendation before you is to do is to ensure, through the mechanism of the Section 173 agreement, which effectively becomes a covenant on the title, that whatever happens, that piece of land would remain open to public access, even though it were in private ownership, if that's helpful.
Thanks, Jeff. Okay, so call on Lord Mayor to...
I'm happy to move that.
I'm happy to second that. And Lord Mayor.
Look, this is complex, and it's probably, with many of these things, they're not entirely where we would prefer to be if we had our druthers. We've had submissions and discussion around the building itself, but in fact our advice, and Councillor Leppard alluded to this in one of his questions, is that part of the reason that this deserves protection is not entirely the building itself. It's the relation of the building to that large plaza in front of it going onto our premium street, Collins Street, and that's the thing that this seeks to protect. I'm prepared to accept the advice of officers after rigorous examination that this building can't be saved. But that's only one element in what I'm proposing here. Remember that through no decision of this council or the previous council, the owner of this building actually has a permit to construct a large building right on Collins Street. And they could do that. And what they are proposing in this arrangement with us is that they will cede that permit and there won't be such a building constructed to destroy the very fabric of what makes this interesting in the first place, and that is the relation between a tall built form and the plaza in front onto Collins Street. There is a danger in being too prescriptive here, and the danger is that they could simply say no. We're not going to agree to your 173. We'll exercise our right to build that building right on Collins Street. We'll continue to keep this building that you insist we protect boarded up, empty of tenants, fenced around, and we will impinge on the pedestrian amenity because we can't force them to develop it. And they can do that. And all the evidence we have is that would lead to a further deterioration of the building to the point where it wasn't just unsafe, it was unsustainable. So we actually do have the whip hand. Councillor Leppard is quite right, and I don't mean that unkindly. We do have a lever in our negotiation. And the thing we haven't mentioned is their right to build that large building right on Collins Street in the middle of that plaza. They are prepared to give that up, and they will enter into that through the 173 agreement, which, as Jeff Lawler says, then becomes a covenant on the land. And therefore, we protect the thing that makes this an historically interesting part of Melbourne. That, for me, is the most important part. I wasn't altogether happy with the original 3A of the recommendation, and I think we've addressed that by saying we're actually going to spell out what, in good faith, has been told to us, that the building envelope will proceed no further forward than the present steps of the National Mutual Building. And that does leave that very large quasi-public plaza in front. And then we've been invited to have representation on the judging committee for the building that will go there to address that plaza. And I think that's a generous offer. So, yes, our power is in the demolition permit. And that's, you know, difficult, because what we're saying is, in order to achieve what we want, and for me that is extinguishing the right to build a building right on Collins Street and maintaining that large public plaza as public open space, we are going to have the demolition of a building that is of interest, but I think it's been demonstrated is not viable and is not suitable for modern adaptation. So for me, no, it's not ideal, but this is the best deal we're likely to be offered on this site. And for me, that's what tilts it. It is a remarkable, huge piece of public open space, effectively, right on Collins Street, and that's what's going to be protected, and there are rules around what they may do there. So for that reason, and for the reason that I accept the rigour with which the officers have looked at the state of the present building, that I would say that this is a compromise on both sides. They get a new building, we lose a building that is of interest to us. We keep the open space, they forego the ability to build on the front of that open space right on Collins Street. So for me, this is a line of best fit. But in fact, I'm very pleased that CBUS have come to us with this, because I think it's better than what was offered to us through ISPT, the previous owners. Nevertheless, there'll be people who are unhappy with the loss of that building. I concede that. I think the gains we get are greater.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Look, as a seconder, I completely agree with what the Lord Mayor has just said. This is an example of competing interests and competing arguments. We have policies saying we're trying to acquire more open space. in the CBD. Now, this will be private open space effectively, but it will be through a section C173 locked in as effectively operating as public open space. I don't think we can underestimate the safety impact of the events of January 2012. I mean, people like Ziggy Switkowski were in that building working, and that was a major safety event which condemned the building. You know, any future tenant, the view would be, you wouldn't go in that building, would you? I mean, is it falling over? Is it coming off? And they've run I think they've mounted a very persuasive argument about the fact that it's unviable because of the reputational damage and the ongoing future safety issues around the professional reports, which say this marble cladding falling off, it could happen again. And you look at it right now, it is a bomb site. It's fenced off. You can't get into it. And I think that the Lord Mayor is right that you know, they could have come along and built their 100,000 square metre tower fronting Collins Street. That's what the year 2000 permit is. It's a very large 100,000 square metre tower. So I think that that all things considered, that I was very surprised that they came back with this proposal, because I know the previous owner, ISPT, had basically said, this is so valuable, this tens of millions of dollars worth of private open space, we can't give it away because it's owned by our millions of industry fund members. And then another industry fund has bought it and has come along and done precisely that, in offering this section C173. So I think that it's a dramatic improvement on the position that we're at. It reflects the dire economics of the situation, that they need an outcome, and they've realised our relatively strong negotiating position here and have come back with an excellent proposal. And so I think, all things considered, we should be very strongly supportive of this particular application tonight. Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Chair. I'm glad to see that you invoked Councillor Ong in his absence with calling the site a bomb site. He'll be happy with that. I think that the Lord Mayor and Councillor Mayne have touched on all the reasons why that this is a relatively good outcome. I think in terms of open space, it could end up being an excellent outcome. To acquire public open space in the CBD of that sort of size, or indeed that location, would be cost prohibitive. That would be the simple answer for Council. So to have that remain as open space is excellent as part of our open space strategy. Councillor Mayne mentioned that that is a real goal of ours, to acquire more open space. So although heritage is also what makes up your city and what makes your city attractive, it is about being a city for people as well. So one of the other things that we've lost through this process is that the proponent needs a quick outcome, but so does the city. So we've lost one of the streets to access, and indeed we've lost that formerly public open space to access throughout the duration of this building being in the state that it's in. So to reach a resolution where we retain that semi-public open space, we get a new building that the City of Melbourne is able to have a say in, I think is an excellent outcome. And when you talk about the other things that the proponent is forgoing, is the most valuable address for them is a Collins Street address. So effectively through this, they're forgoing an immediate Collins Street address. So I think from my point of view, although all things aren't signed, sealed and delivered, the good faith that the proponent is entering into these negotiations with, recognising, as Councillor Leppett said, that we do have the whip hand, the good faith is encouraging.
Thanks, Councillor. What is there a speaker against? Is there any other speakers? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with the arguments made by the mover and yourself so far, and so I will be supporting this motion. But let me also just put on record that, I don't want to see this building demolished. I agree that C186 had its principles right, that this is a building worth protecting, and so I have a lot of sympathy with the submissions made that we should be doing more to see how the externals of the building at least can be kept intact, whilst we can see what else can be done to make sure that it's not an unsafe site. However, of course, the professional advice in front of us is that that is not a realistic option. And so I, of course, accept that, and with a bit of regret, can concede that demolition is the only safe option here. But I am nervous about the open space and the strength of the Section 173 agreement as mentioned in Condition 3, which is why I asked the questions before the debate began. This amended motion is obviously an improvement, I think, on what was there before, because part 3A of the conditions, in my, you know, bush lawyer skills, were not quite, nowhere near as strong as they could have been. And so I know that we shouldn't be pushing the envelope too far, because it then opens us up to challenge. I do want to see where that line of best fit that the Lord Mayor describes can be pushed as far as it can, where we're still confident that the risk isn't too great that it's going to be thrown out of VCAT, where we can get the best possible outcome for this and future generations. So for the reasons that Councillor Wood's gone into on open space, of course, this is something we need to that we'll be supporting tonight, it looks like, and just want to make sure that line is pushed in favour of the public of Melbourne as far as we possibly can. So I support this motion, and thank you to those who have moved the late amendment. I think it's an excellent improvement.
Thanks, Councillor Leppard. Would any other councillor like to speak? Can I put that to the vote? All those in favour? Any against? Declare that carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Wood to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the environment portfolio, and if we can recover Councillor Wong, here he comes.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. We'll just wait for Councillor Wong to return. So that's a 10-minute recess, really, by the time he makes it back to the seat, especially with his dodgy hip. So there are two reports from management for consideration under the environment portfolio. Agenda item 6.3, total watermark, City as a Catchment 2014 update. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? Very good. I'll move the recommendation from officers on screen. Can I get a seconder for that? Councillor Oak. So we've got essentially two really important strategies before us tonight. They've been out for an extensive public consultation process and just hunting through all the comments from the various stakeholders shows just how much work was undertaken by officers. And I know it's not the done thing to sort of name officers, but Beth and Krista and indeed Ralph have worked hard on both of these, as has many of the other teams. So I congratulate them on all the work that they've done. With the total watermark strategy, you don't have to be a very intelligent person to understand that having just gone through a week of over 40 degree temperatures, that water is something which is vital to our city and indeed is something which can either continue growth, continue making our city look as great as it does, or essentially in the worst case scenario, limit growth. So with the strategy, it looks at four areas: climate change and adaptation for flood. We understand that stormwater is both an asset but also something which, if not mitigated, can certainly impact on the livability of our city. So the second area of focus is water for livability, water for the environment, and over 26 water harvesting systems across the municipality are currently operating, so not just City of Melbourne but right across the board, and also water use. So I think we're up over 20% of the City of Melbourne's water is now reclaimed, and we've got some pretty ambitious targets to drive that further forward into the future. So I commend again the work done by officers and also thank all the submitters to this process. I think it's been a really good consultative process through many different mediums, and I look forward to the ongoing implementation of the watermark strategy, which is quite a mature strategy as part of the City of Melbourne's suite of strategies. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. I'm not sure when there was the rule about not naming officers, but I understand that. Right. But I too would like to acknowledge and congratulate all the officers and managers involved in this project. It's been going for a long time. It was the watermark was updated in the last council, and that particular strategy has won many awards, and I don't doubt that this updated strategy will do as well. It addresses climate adaptation in an incredibly sophisticated way, using data modelling technology in ways that, exemplar around the world. And I think that Councillor Wood would have heard that in his recent trip to C40 conference. And I think that one of the best thing, one of the, endorsements of the strategy is that not only through the extent
through the extensive consultation, the feedback has been, well, there's not many changes to be made. In fact, I'm sure there's quite a lot of jealousy amongst the stakeholders about the strategy that we intend to embark on and the integrated water management model that we're committed to at the City of Melbourne is extraordinary and one that we should all be proud of. And if only we could get one statewide, it would be great. And anyway, I commend the strategy and recommend that people look at particularly the targets on page 4 of the document, because that's what we've got to look forward to achieving. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers for the motion? Any other speakers against? I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Our next item is agenda item 6.4, zero net emissions by 2020-2014 update. Again, I'm happy to move the officer's recommendation. I think... can I get a seconder? Yes, I can. Councillor Oak, thank you very much. too eager with this one, but for very good reason. Having just come back from the C40 summit in Joburg, I think it just reinforced just how important this strategy is to our municipality. Joburg. You can say Joburg as well, Councillor Ong, I assure you. Just Councillor Ong correcting my English there for me. So Joburg, the summit there was fantastic. And when you think about that network, there's over 63 different cities represented in that network. I think one of the things that was an eye-opener for me that this really wasn't just about climate, it really was about where the City of Melbourne is positioned across the world, how it is viewed, and, you know, many of those cities that we were mixing with, you know, New York, Vancouver, Berlin, those sorts of cities are really pushing the envelope in terms of what's possible in this space. You look at Portland and they're, you know, retrofitting an entire tram network. So I think City of Melbourne has had, you know, a good start in this. We've got a relatively good public transport system, I'll put that in inverted commas. But one of the biggest issues that we face, of course, like most of Australia, we're powered predominantly by brown coal. So this zero net emissions is an extremely ambitious target. And again, lots of work is being done with our partner organisations, with private business, with commercial buildings, with residents, because City of Melbourne is less than 1% of emissions. So this really is a partnership. Many of those partners have made some valuable submissions to this consultative process. We look at council operations where we're carbon neutral, which is a great achievement. Our commercial buildings and industry, where the neighbours disclosure for commercial buildings has really driven the commercial market for green buildings. And of course our EUA legislation, which is now being looked at by Seoul in terms of its implementation. So lots of recognition worldwide. Of course, residential stationary energy supply, where I'm pleased to say that this strategy actually sets for the first time a 25% renewable energy target by 2018 for our municipality, transport and waste management. Again, coming back to the commercial building sector, the Lord Mayor journeyed to London where he collected C40 Climate Leadership, Siemens Leadership Award. So again, that international recognition for what Melbourne is doing is really, really important. So I commend the strategy, commend the work of officers, Councillor Oak as the seconder.
Thank you, Aaron. You know, it's all good and very good and well to say that you want to be zero net emission, but to actually achieve it is quite difficult, and I've had many many good conversations with Krista and her team and Jeff Lawler about this issue over many years, and how you actually go about becoming a zero net emission strategy is much more difficult than it seems, unless you've got a blank checkbook and, I don't know, unlimited sources of renewable energy. And I think that the team have really thought about how we're going to achieve it, so it's not just lip service to the term. And the solutions that they've come up to, given, as Aaron, as Councillor Wood has highlighted, it's very difficult, not only in Australia, but especially in Victoria, around our energy source and in the structures that we have in the City of Melbourne in particular. The solutions that they've identified are challenging, but the way they're going to go about doing or trying to achieve it is leading again, world leading, and I would like to again acknowledge Jeff Lawler and Krista and the team for really working incredibly hard to get us to zero net emissions, because it is a small achievement. It won't be a small achievement when we get there, and the consultation again and the response to the consultation on this report is excellent, and I know that a lot of people have spoken to me about what they would like to have included in the strategy, and as far as I can see, you've pretty much taken it all on board and adopted it or included it as much as possible, and advised otherwise, and I think that's excellent in terms of community engagement, that you really have taken on board the information that has been presented to you. So thank you, and I look forward to, again, the hard work ahead.
Thanks, Councillor Ogg. Any other speakers for the motion? Councillor Ong.
Thank you, Chair. It's good to see this come back. You know, the first one that we did in the first term, we've learned from some of the experiences what's worked. We had to look at the objectives and review the targets and fine-tune some of the strategies. I think it's important that, to acknowledge, and the Lord Mayor said this many times, while countries and governments debate this forever, I think it's time the cities are setting the lead and setting the pace, and it's great to see that the City of Melbourne is one of the top cities in the world pushing this agenda. And this report is very important because it looks at how the city continues to strive on reducing our city and also eventually, hopefully, the country and the world's carbon footprint. Now, if you look at some of the pie charts and see where the biggest contributors, and you look at the actions that the city has done through the 1,200 buildings in the EUA, all those initiatives and the traits, how I call it, the compactors, dehydrators, and all that, and looking at reducing waste to landfill. Quite a lot of work has been done. There's still a lot more to be done. We've still got areas where we are working on residential areas, and hopefully we'll get some further impact. And I think when we look at the page where the council's operations, the two biggest contributors seem to be city power, street lighting, electricity that the city uses. I know that the city's upgrade program, we're putting in a lot of new LED, but I know we have been working with city power to try to improve the street lighting. Unfortunately, in my view, it's not progressing fast enough, because the reality is that we can do more with city power, and they actually take the action to upgrade a lot of our street lighting and make it a lot more efficient and less maintenance and even less costly. It would help us a lot more, and then it'll reduce the city's footprint significantly. And I think there are plenty of opportunities where city and city power could do. And then we can work with the rest of industry that operates in the city. So I commend officers for this report. And Jeff, I know you've been pushing this with Krista. Keep pushing.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. Any other speakers for the motion? Any speakers against? In that case, I'll just conclude debate just with a few little points of positivity, because it is a space which it sort of seems to be sort of one step forward, two steps back, but I can assure you that at City of Melbourne there's been a lot of great steps forward, you know, over the past sort of 4 or 5 years, but indeed even in recent times. So I was at a launch. Councillor Ong talks about some of our biggest emissions profiles, and obviously one of those is the commercial building sector. And I was at a launch, which I could have sworn it, you know, must have been a Greenies convention or something like that, but it was actually Mervac. And they've got a zero net emissions strategy by 2030, and this is one of our biggest developers in the city and one of our biggest building owners in the city. So this sort of language has moved from the sphere of you know, people who love the environment to people who understand that this is a great business case as well. That where there are great risks, there are also huge opportunities, and it's about maximising the opportunities and minimising the risks as we move forward into a different type of climate, unfortunately. So lots to look forward to, lots of work to do, and it's no small challenge, but I think stretch targets are good for cities like City of Melbourne, which set themselves to be bold and inspirational in terms of leadership. So I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Sorry? Oh, yeah, I'll vote against it. Absolutely. Thanks. Councillor's giving me a hard time here. I now call on Councillor Louis to assume the role of the chair of the meeting in relation to the economic development portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. There's one report from management for the consideration of the economic development portfolio. agenda item 6.5, proposed travel by the Lord Mayor, Robert Bull, and two councillors to Osaka, Japan, and Beijing, and Tianjin, China, in March 2014. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item?
I'm happy to move it.
Sure. Thank you, Lord Mayor. Is there a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Wood.
Just let me speak briefly to it. I must say, I'm not a great fan of these super missions that you sometimes see from federal or state governments, where they take 300 and 400 businesses into our trading partners to raise awareness and try to drive value for our businesses. In the past, we've used a much more contained model, targeted business, and in this particular trip, where we're talking about biotech, clean tech, urban design, sustainable building sectors, the very things that our hosts have asked us to bring, and a small and manageable number of them, so that we can connect them directly to prospective customers and partners. And that approach, when Mayor Huang from Tianjin was here in 2011, meant $840 million worth of business for Melbourne businesses. And when we returned in 2012, a more modest but nevertheless substantial $70 million worth of business for Melbourne businesses. So when we do go, we actually get great results. And it's partly because it's not scattergun, and great credit to Jane Sharwood and her officers for making sure that we are specifically targeted. So I've absolute conviction that Mayor Huang in Tianjin will again drive value for us from those businesses that he's asked us to bring. Jeff Raby, our former ambassador, has said that on any visit to China, you simply must make that stop in Beijing, because it's a centralised decision-making nation, as we know. And our sister city, Osaka, although they will be in the midst of a general election, have also asked for these businesses to be part of an exchange with them. So while I'm entirely used to being criticised for taking overseas trips, in this case, I am absolutely confident that we will demonstrate that we will drive, for the cost of the $35,000 for the three of us, we will drive many tens of millions of dollars of value for the Melbourne businesses that we take into China and Japan. We have a very warm relationship with Tianjin in particular, but also great relationships in Osaka and in Beijing, and we should be leveraging that on behalf of the businesses here. The other point I would make is, we often talk about the changing economy. We've had some terrible news about businesses in manufacturing that are closing down in the coming years here in Melbourne and across Victoria. And you can't just wring your hands at that. You've got to think, how does the economy transform itself to take up those people into the knowledge economy, whether it is clean tech or biotech or urban design or sustainable building? How do we encourage more employment for our citizens in the transition economy that we are being forced to confront? One of the ways of doing it is to look at these big and hungry markets like China and Japan, and therefore I'm very confident that we will drive great value for our city, great value for those businesses, and great value for employment in our city as well.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Would the second like to speak?
Also, just briefly picking up on the Lord Mayor's point, I should know that great minds think alike, Lord Mayor. That's exactly the sort of points that I was going to touch on, that you can't have companies like SBC, Toyota, Ford, all packing up shop and effectively moving on, although people are still holding out hope for SBC. And then not be thinking about what the businesses of tomorrow are. So I noticed that they're none of our good friends at the media are sitting in their two allocated seats down the front, but you should expect that from the Herald Sun. But they can't, on one hand, run a campaign for Toyota, Ford, SPC, and then have a go at the City of Melbourne for going over to drum up new business for this state and this city.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Are there any further speakers for the motion? Any further speakers against the motion? No? Okay. In that case, maybe I'll just put in a quick word. I think the Lord Mayor has wrapped up. Yeah. Sorry?
I didn't see anyone
vote. No, I haven't voted.
We finished debate before we vote, usually.
Thanks for your input, Anthony. Look, can I just wrap up? I think the Lord Mayor's actually wrapped up everything pretty well. But it is from assuming that it's once it's passed tonight, the green light goes on, and all the other remaining delegates will be, I suppose, Jane will round them up nicely and give them certainly the pre-brief before they leave. But what it is special is because if the Lord Mayor's leading the mission, it adds a totally elevated level to the connections, and it is true. Certain missions don't work, and it doesn't suit all businesses. But I think we're a select group, a boutique group. We certainly will drive some great businesses for Melbourne companies. Thank you. In that case, can I put the motion to a vote? All those in favour? Unanimously passed. Thank you. Can I now call on Councillor Fosler to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the people city portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Louis. There is one report from management for consideration under the People City Portfolio. Agenda item 6.6, Homelessness Advisory Committee. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? In that case, I'll move the officer's recommendation. Is there a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Watts. The Homelessness Advisory Committee has been an integral part of our advisory committee system at the City of Melbourne, and entering into its third year this year, I know that in the last 15 months or so, or 16 months, that I've been a councillor, it's been of enormous help to me in getting across some of the very important issues associated with homelessness in our city, and I can't ignore the timeliness of a motion like this either, with the great attention recently given to the issue of homelessness, and rightly so, given the recent tragedy at Enterprise Park. And of course, given the prominence that the issue rightly deserves, the Homelessness Advisory Committee has been enormously helpful in making sure that I know myself, but also my predecessor, has been appraised of the very prevalent issues that we need to be constantly aware of. This recommendation involves a little bit of turnover within the advisory committee. There'll be, with this motion, should it pass, there'll be seven new advisory committee members, and seven will be retained from the previous advisory committee. Gives us a great level of balance, I think, the experience of the previous committees, as well as some new voices and new faces to bring some fresh ideas to council, which is also very important. One thing that stands out to me about the new members of the advisory committee is that two of them have direct experience of homelessness themselves. One, again, is a returning member of the committee, but one is a new member. So, again, should the motion pass, I'll be very quick to welcome those people. Councillor Watts, would you like to say a few words?
Very briefly, I'm very pleased to support this. It seems to me in recent conversations with people from this sector, working with the homeless, that they see Melbourne as having an obligation, if you like, to behave in an exemplary way. I discovered today, perhaps some of you noticed, and I didn't, that Dandenong actually and Springvale and all of these sort of outer suburb councils have a problem too. We have an advantage, if you like, in the City of Melbourne in that we probably have more resources to devote to addressing some of the problems, but we have an obligation also to provide the best we can so people can use us as a model. So I'm really thinking the advice we get from this committee is going to be valuable much, much broader than our city alone.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Would any other councillor like to speak in favour of the motion? Sorry.
Just really briefly, I support the appointment of these committee members, and in doing so, I guess I thank them in advance for not only putting up their hand to be on the advisory committee, but for the work that they will do as a result. Many of the names listed are stalwarts, they're tireless advocates in this space, and to contribute more of their time to this issue only highlights their commitment to trying to address the issue of homelessness in our city. So I'd just like to acknowledge their...
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Would any councillor like to speak against the motion? You wouldn't think so, would you? Any councillor anyone else like to speak in favour of the motion? All right, in that case, just quickly to sum up, it's important to recognise, I think, and it's easily done through the Homelessness Advisory Committee, that homelessness doesn't just occur on really hot days. It's a year-round problem, and it's something that we need year-round responses to, and that's what we can rely on the Advisory Committee for. And, of course, I'm speaking having come from a meeting this morning of the stakeholders in the city working with the homeless and working to avoid homelessness and respond to homelessness. And their recommendations too will complement what the Advisory Committee has to offer us. And I know that there were some great ideas that came out this morning about how to proceed and how to respond better to those issues in Melbourne. So on that note, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? The motion's carried unanimously. Thank you. I now call on Councillor Mayne to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Finance and Governance portfolio.
Thanks, Councillor Foster. There are three reports from management for consideration under the Finance and Governance portfolio. The first is Agenda Item 6.7, which is the allocation of the discretionary fund for the second quarter of the 2013-14 financial year. I call on a councillor to move a motion. Is there a second to Councillor Wong? The Deputy Lord Mayor, a long speech from Councillor Wong?
No.
Deputy Lord Mayor?
No, as it is on the floor.
15 seconds to say that it's good that we've only spent about $100,000 of the $300,000. Well done, councillors, for good discipline on spending. We cut the budget for discretionary ad hocery. And we cut it by a couple of hundred thousand and we're now well under it. So good discipline, and to the officers as well. If we can continue this trend, we'll have a better governed operation going forward. All those in favour? Any against? Declare that passed unanimously. Agenda item 6.8 is the 2013-14 to second quarter financial performance report. I'd like to call on our CFO, Phil Nguyen, to make a brief presentation on this item. As it's the half year of the financials, it's an important item. Phil.
Thanks, Councillor May, and good evening, councillors. The purpose of this report is to inform the Future Melbourne Committee of the financial performance of the council for the quarter ending 31st December 2013. In accordance with the Local Government Act, and also to provide information on supplementary valuations adopted by the CEO under delegation. The preliminary result for the 6 months shows that we are ahead of budget by $6.67 million, with an underlying result of $12.57 million compared to a budget of $5.9 million. I will note that within the report, there's the significant variances detailed in the report, so I won't go into the details around those. But essentially, when you remove the timing differences, and for example, in revenue, we've got some grants received earlier than expected. And on the expenditure side, councillors have just endorsed the previous report about grants not being allocated fully at this point in time. Once you allow for those timing differences, we actually expect to be right on budget. If you look at our revenue side, all the revenue streams are really on track. The biggest challenge we do have is on our subsidiary company revenue, which we are currently off budget, and we expect that to be the case for the full year. On the expenditure side, there's a lot of timing differences there. We've made some great progress on projects, and we expect to deliver those by the year end. But at this point in time, we just haven't spent the money at this stage. So on that note, I recommend the report to councillors, and happy to answer any questions.
Questions, councillors?
Yes, quick question.
Councillor Wong?
Basically saying it's a timing issue, but I thought one of the key considerations is the dividends coming from our subsidiary company, which originally was not planned when we put the budget together, correct?
Correct.
So if that continues, if we're still in a budget, that means in many ways our income has gone up, or is it our efficiencies have improved?
The revenue from our subsidiaries will be down for the year. I expect that to be offset by a number of other revenue streams, as detailed in the report. For example, at the moment, we're ahead on parking fines, planning and building fees, and a number of other smaller categories. So from a revenue perspective, we'll have some unders from the subsidiaries, which will be offset partially by some overs on the other revenue streams.
Any other questions, councillors? Okay, I'm happy to move the officer report if there are a seconder for that. Councillor Wood. Okay, well, thanks for the presentation. I think it's fair to say that the financials of the City of Melbourne are still in good shape. It is true that our cash balance has reduced to probably a 20-year low of 69 million after a record level of capital spend over the last couple of years. But, you know, there's no debt, and there's very few levels of government that can actually have a net cash position. I think the Foo's obviously mentioned the subsidiary revenue. I think we probably deserve to be a bit more specific about that, is that Citywide is behind budget this year, and we've had issues where we've recently awarded a contract where they were the contractor in our parks and gardens. That's not driven this outcome because that decision hasn't come into effect yet. But obviously, it's probably a deviation from projections like we haven't seen in many years. So it's a challenging market environment for all contractors at the moment. And obviously, our 100% owned subsidiary, Citywide, which is a very large business with hundreds of millions of revenue and over 1,000 staff operating nationally, that we've had a tremendous run out of Citywide over a long period of time, often taking in $10 million plus in cash into the council. That this particular year there are challenges. So I guess that's probably first become apparent in this report tonight, and we need to be quite open about it. And obviously Citywide is working very hard to try and bring back the situation. The parking fees being $1.1 million ahead of budget, I think probably the explanation there is that we've taken a conservative budget position after falling, I think, close to $8 million short in the previous year. So we've lowered the bar in terms of what we expected we would bring in, and it's come in slightly above that. But overall, I think that on projections, on things like rates, the officers have been, you know, very, very good in accurately projecting the budget. So you don't like too many surprises, and I think it's good to see that we pretty much are on track overall. And ratepayers can be comforted by the fact that we are AAA. We're the only AAA-rated council in Australia. We have a net cash balance, and we have the capacity, the balance sheet strength, to be able to respond to situations as they arise, which is what other councils and levels of government don't have similar flexibility. So, Councillor Wood, as the seconder.
Not too much to add there, Chair. But I think, you know, the point does need to be made. You've made it well, but to make it again, I think the numbers are that City of Melbourne would be in the top 10% size of businesses if it was effectively a business. So to constantly come in on budget is a credit to Foo and the team. I think the underlying numbers demonstrate that the times are tightening up, and that's being reflected in the economy as a whole. So we're entering into a new budget phase, which is going to be a little bit more difficult than those previous, but it does make it that bit easier to know that we're in a cash positive position going into that budgeting phase.
Is there a speaker for the motion? Councillor Ong.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few comments. It's very pleasing to see that our capital expenditure works program is actually ahead of schedule compared to about 5 years ago. And what the Chair has said is true. Our cash balance has been reducing, but if you look at the years 10, 11 and 12, where we have unprecedented capital expenditure on a lot of major projects, including Swanston Street and others, and where we were spending over $100 million a year compared to the roughly $70 million the previous years. So, but what we've delivered to the community is significant improvements in infrastructure and facilities and services. So I think depending on what decisions this new council makes over the next remaining 3 years, it will either continue to deplete it or just build it up again. And our biggest next project is, of course, the Queen Victoria Market. And the Chair has been looking at options on how we can actually fund it. I think it's very important to say, to just stress that, you know, the administration of the City of Melbourne, who has the responsibility to ensure that the operations are run efficiently and the services are provided to the community in the best possible levels, should take a lot of credit for ensuring this, because as councillors here, we don't have the knowledge to go down to the details of each area of the council on how they operate, but and the advice given to us always helps us to make our decisions. And I actually want to just mention that, appreciate that we have a very professional organisation here, which is probably one of the best councils in the country.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other speakers? The Lord Mayor. Oh, question, Lord Mayor.
Can I just ask a question of Foo?
Something I noticed in reading this, Fu, is that we seem to have been rolled a number of times in VCAT and VGV on objections in particular around supplementary valuations. I know they don't record the ones where we win, but is there some pattern to that that we should be aware of, or is that the normal pattern of them?
I'll probably defer it to our manager of property services, Greg Stevens,
Greg,
Lord Mayor.
That's fine.
3 you, Chair. The pattern is that they're coming through the sub-process now. So a valuation objection that ends up in appeal at VCAT takes a lot of time. These are a product of objections that were lodged to the first year of the life of the valuation, so that's 12, 13. So that's why we're seeing them occur now. We're reaching settlement of those that have big financial outcomes.
But do you have a view about whether this is about the same number, greater or fewer?
The number of objections and subsequent appeals is heightened. There is no doubt in. We don't have figures here tonight, but I'm happy to provide those. But yes, our numbers have increased, and I don't foresee a significant change going forward in that area.
Thank you.
Any other speakers? I guess just in conclusion, on that valuation challenges question, because the state is reaping so much money now from land tax, and land tax is driven in part by our valuations, that we're sort of the meat in the sandwich in many of these situations where landowners are looking to knock over their land tax bill and challenge our valuation. So it's not that our rates or our valuations are deemed excessive, it really is the land tax play which is driving that. I guess the other point I'd make, and as we're about to have a discussion on the Queen Vic market, is we haven't yet produced a budget which accommodates our largest ever capital program. That's the challenge over the coming budgets, is our balance sheet and the ability to take in $100 million, $200 million type capital program over maybe 5 to 10 years. So that's the challenge that's ahead of us, but we are in a strong position going into that deliberation. So we'll go to the vote. All those in favour? Any against? Declare that carried unanimously. And agenda item 6.9 is the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Project Update. And I'd like to call on Rob Adams, the Director of City Design, to make a brief presentation on this item. Seeing as we have a couple of submitters to follow, Rob can present first.
Thank you, Chair. This report follows on the commencement of this project on the 31st of October with the agreement of the State Government. Since that time, we've undertaken the first stage of community engagement, and that commenced early in November and ran through November. And Kapir, who are our consultants in that, used a number of mechanisms to test how the general public, the stakeholders, the traders felt about the market going forward. And that report is tabled here tonight and produces a framework on which we will go back to the community again early in April to further expand our understanding of the community, where the community would like to take the market, including the traders and other stakeholders. We will also have put in place tonight, if you should agree, a governance structure that will help make sure there's alignment between the Queen Victoria Market Board and their responsibilities and the Council, who is ultimately responsible for the procurement of this project. And that structure is tabled for your consideration. The third issue is an initial program of the sorts of works that will like to take place over the next 18 months as this project starts to be fleshed out and then ultimately goes into a more physical phase starting over the next 18 months for the upgrade and renewal of the market. So essentially those are the three items that are covered by this report, and I take it for your consideration.
Any questions for Rob? Yes, Councillor Watts.
Professor Adams, I'm just seeking reassurance that some of these working groups that are cited in the organisational diagram, one of them at least, will refer to community.
Yes, there will be a number. The diagram as it's sketched out in this report is just indicative. There can be any number of working groups established, and certainly there will be the mechanism whereby through three stages of consultation we'll go out to the community But there may well be a representative group that we actually continue to talk to through one of those working groups.
Okay, any other questions? Thanks, Rob. We'll now call on the first of our two submitters, Dr. John Price. Dr. Price, you've got 3 minutes to submit on this item.
Thank you very much. I want to draw just attention to one thing. Basically, the survey or the consultation that was conducted didn't actually propose very much for the future. And in fact, there was extremely few comments about the future, except the public doesn't want much change. That's one comment. And the other comment, which is the one I'm interested in at the moment, is the question of the underground car park. At the moment, we live in ignorance of what is proposed. There is a suggestion, and we understand it to be under sheds A, B and C, that an extremely large underground car park is proposed. May I point out on page 38 what the traders have said about that? During the trader discussion group on the 19th of November 2013, many participants favoured a multi-storey car park as opposed to an underground car park, and they believed it would be safer, cheaper and a less disruptive option. Now, my understanding about safety, and I speak to you, by the way, as a ratepayer, a local resident, and somebody who's interested in heritage, and also somebody who's a shopper. Let me say safety. We're going to have a large underground car park located on the fringe of the city and presumably open at nights. So safety is about whether people will actually want to park in it, apart from market times. Then we have the word cheaper. Now, if you're going to establish a huge underground market and do it on council finances, I really would be astonished, Councillor Mayne, because that would represent to you a problem, because you've established an underground car park and then you've got, you know, that the one thing that the traders want is low car parking fees. So you establish an underground car park and say, right, it's $25 to park in there. You've got a conflict of interest, because when the $25 is to pay off your debt, but these people, the traders, some of whom are here tonight, are wanting people to be able to park very cheaply in the area. So you've got a conflict there. And the last thing is less disruptive, because if it is under A, B and C shed, it is very disruptive, both of heritage and of a large number of traders for quite a long time. I just... So I wanted to pose to you whether there's other development options apart from underground car parks and whether they're being investigated. And one of them obviously is that since there's a large number of very large buildings probably going to be built in this area in the next 10 years, whether those people are allowed to going to be allowed to put in commercial car parks at their own volition, at their own expense, without the council actually paying for them. And that's really the issue. Because if they put them in, then the council doesn't have to put them in. They will be above ground, they might be quite pleasant, and okay, people will have to push a trolley 100 or 200 metres, but that's it.
Thanks, Dr. Price. Dr. Price? Councillor Wood's got a question for you.
Yeah. I've got two questions, actually. And forgive me, they're not meaning to be facetious in any way, I'll premise it with that. You mentioned underground car parks. Have you been to the Melbourne Central underground car park?
Then let me tell you the examples.
No, just have you been to that? Because I just want to establish that underground car parks can actually be safe.
Oh, I'm sure they can be safe. But the car parks we're talking about that's a fairly busy one. We're going to talk about the car parks, particularly the one in the middle of the exhibition gardens. I doubt whether that's ever operated at profit. It's a huge sterile space.
Two different things. Sorry, I just wanted to just touch on the safety that they're safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the other question was, I take your point about heritage, but do you not think that an underground car park, that aesthetics of the city are just as important, and therefore wouldn't an above ground car park be more aesthetically damaging to the city?
The moment you're approving buildings, or somebody's approving buildings at 200 metres high in the area,
not us.
The answer is yes. You've already I understand, and I've looked at the picture, for example, of the building approved to the Mazda site. The Mazda site appears to contain a commercial car park of about three or four floors. Is that correct? And are you encouraging that instead of building your own?
I think I was asking you a question about the aesthetics, but that's fine.
The aesthetics are that you're approving such buildings.
Okay, a second submitter, Anthony Vanderkrantz. 3 minutes, Anthony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Council. I share the concerns expressed by the previous speaker that there is not enough concrete details for the community to get their heads around as to what actually is being proposed. One of the maps that I have seen in a press release involves a road being connecting Dynon Road and Franklin Street, put through the south side car park that currently exists. If this proposal is on the books, I would strongly oppose it. I think it is a backward step. The City of Melbourne's just spent $3 million engineering congestion in Latrobe Street trying to reduce it, to now open up a section through what is a heavily pedestrianised precinct to allow traffic to flow from Dynon Road into the educational precinct would be a disaster, particularly when the traffic ends up at the intersection of Victoria Street and Franklin Street, an area which I've unfortunately had to witness a very major and serious accident involving pedestrians on that intersection. I would think that would be an inappropriate development and the council should rule that concept out from the word go. As to the car park proposals, I would take exception to the previous speaker and I would oppose any suggestion of having an above ground car park. I think that would certainly destroy the ambience of the precinct. I think it's important that the City of Melbourne bears the information that's coming out of the preliminary surveys that people are looking for a low density development in this particular area, not a high towered development to the south. I think there's an excellent opportunity that we can see where we can develop single-storey shopping-type arcades along that area, perhaps even have a stepped terraced or piazza-type approach leading up towards William Street. I think it has a huge potential in having potentially a rooftop-type garden where members of the public could congregate on top of a low-level development. So in that sense, I welcome the idea of this particular concept, provided the council doesn't go down the track of trying to push its own agenda. The current proposals that have been mooted around are clearly the wrong proposals for this development site. In terms of the operation of the market itself, I think it's been highlighted under 3.4 of the report. It's long overdue, but the City of Melbourne should be ensuring that the market precinct trades 7 days a week. I would suggest that the opening hours be from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m, if not longer. As it stands now, when the market is in recess, the days where it doesn't operate, it has a major impact on the surrounding businesses, which are suffering as a result. It's long overdue, and the City of Melbourne should perhaps try and implement a seven-day week trading earlier, if need be. Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. I call on a councillor to move a motion. Lord Mayor. Seconded by Councillor Wood. Lord Mayor.
Thank you, and thank you to the submitters. I recognise their passion for it. You would understand, though, the difficulty of us proceeding. Even with two submitters tonight, they have fundamentally disagreed with each other on a basic precept of what is proposed. Therefore...
Order. Order.
Well, we have one saying... We have one saying above ground, and the other one saying we disagree with that. That's the reality of what you both just said. On a basic precept. So,
hang on, Dr. Price, you've had two cracks.
The other part is that we are proceeding carefully, in a lockstep fashion, to consult with as many people as we can, and we get criticised when we do that for not providing enough detail, and this isn't fleshed out properly. If we had gone the other way with some sort of predetermined plan and put it out there as if it had sprung like Athena from Jupiter's brow, we would have been accused of rushing ahead and being precipitate. So we kind of can't win there, and I get that, and I understand people's love of the market. But can I take you back actually to one of the things that pushed us down this track? And it was the traders coming to say to us, if you don't make an investment in this market, we won't be here. And it comes from our own figures about the trading at the market and the mix at the market. We understand and we appreciate and we want to include the people who have a love for and great expertise in the market and how it works. And we are bound by those heritage considerations. I would point out that if you look at the governance structure that's proposed on page 5 of 59, there is, it's a very careful governance structure and a very, you know, I hope not overly complex, but it shows you where responsibility lies. And it has a range of advisory groups, which include people with expertise in areas like heritage, in areas like trading, you know, members of the public, users. So there is ample scope, not just during the consultation process, but during the whole process, for there to be that voice coming in to what we do. I mean, I guess I hate to ask people to just trust us, but can I promise you, we don't sit here thinking to ourselves, how do we best destroy one of the great icons of the city of Melbourne? You know, that's not what we do. We actually think, how can we make sure that it is enjoyed in the most fruitful way for generations to come? And I know we've had submissions on, for instance, Melbourne's oldest cemetery, and yet what we've got at the moment is an asphalt car park with cars on it, not exactly the most respectful commemoration of our earliest dead. So we will continue to talk to the public. We won't always agree, but we have in mind what is being told to us. That's why we make this public. It's why people can come and talk to us the whole time. But in the end, we've got a responsibility to those traders in particular to make sure they can continue to ply their trade and to make sure the Queen Victoria Market remains for the next generations of Melburnians that icon of our city that we want it to be. We are acting in good faith, whether it's consultation with the community, whether it is the final design when we land on it, you know, whether it is how we finance it over future years, and we will listen to those arguments. But the clear message to me, from traders in particular, was to do nothing is not an option for us. And I want to make sure that in particular we work with traders so the market continues to operate as we do this work as well. We've got to protect their livelihoods and then allow them, and our economic modelling does show us that if we do work to the market that is respectful, that does protect the heritage, but provides the modern facilities that our traders need, then we actually have a booming market there. We have a market that, you know, doubles in turnover. And that's what I want, as well as making it an absolute rallying place in the city. You know, the Federation Square of that side of the city where people do come and gather. When we want to make the operating hours longer, and I think that is right, I'm not asking traders to work longer hours. Goodness knows they work long enough hours as it is. But are there a variety of uses that we can put in there that complement that trading, that bring people there so it becomes a rallying point for the people of the city? So in short, well, I won't respond to that, but the point is that we continue to talk to people to try to get the best result we can for our traders, for that market, and for the people of Victoria. And this is one more element of saying to the public, this is what we've found so far. What do you think of that before we go to the next step? I have not seen a process that is more about consultation with every group that has an interest in the market. And I'm proud of the work that's been done so far, and I look forward to moving to the next steps of making an investment in the future of the market.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillor Wood.
Look, support what the Lord Mayor's. The point is well made that this is really a heavily consultative process, and I think the levels to which City of Melbourne are going to, you know, far and above any other project, represent the type of capital investment that we're going to make in this end of the city. That end of the city is where I rent office space. That end of the city is where a lot of North Melbourne people are looking for connection to the CBD. So this represents a huge opportunity, but as the Lord Mayor touched on, if you look at markets around the world, they don't have a great history. Many of them have declined or, in fact, shut up shop. So this whole project is about guaranteeing all that we love about the current market and ensuring that it becomes commercially viable into the future, so it's a place that we can love and be part of into the future. I can't resist touching on the car park. I think both submitters spoke passionately on their views on that. The one thing I will say is that retaining car parking has been one of the big things that traders have said to us in terms of the financial viability. Then we have to look at it through the prism of open space and the aesthetics of the city and where we want to go to as a go-ahead city. So in putting car parking underground, it's a compromise situation as such. It still allows those traders to have that car parking that keeps the market financially viable to them. But what it allows is public open space above that. And I think one of the most attractive propositions from the early conceptual designs of this market and this consultation process is the introduction of genuine open space. Not open space where cars are parked on it a lot of the time, but genuine open space. I think one of the other points that the Lord Mayor touched on, and I think, Anthony, you touched on this as well, is the much longer activation. One of the most successful parts of the market in recent times has been the night markets. If you haven't been, fantastic, really great activation of that much-loved space. Events, all sorts of different things going on there. And that leads to things like greater public safety around those areas at night. Because, again, being in that area a lot, I can assure you on non-market days, on non-night market days, we effectively have a huge swathe of land which is hugely underutilised. So I recognise that you know, everyone's going to be really passionate about this. There's many avenues to have your say. I'd encourage you to have your say because that's exactly what we're looking for. But as the Lord Mayor said, eventually we're going to have to balance up all the competing interests. How do we keep it commercially viable? How do we pay for the redevelopment? And how do we make sure this market stays as a great piece of our city into the future?
Thanks, Councillor Wood. Councillor Wong.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just say a few quick things. I think it's great that we are actually taking this very strategic approach and also getting the community and all stakeholders involved, because it's very important that as we modernise the Queen Victoria Market while keeping its heritage, its history, and making sure that it continues to function well as a market in the future and for generations. I think some of us might have, and some people might have noticed on what they did in Barcelona's market, and that's an example of how we can do something, do it really well. Just a comment on previously made about the council's approving tall developments around the market. The council itself has actually not approved any tall developments around the market. Many of these things are over the 25,000 metre mark, and it goes to the minister, and we consistently put in concerns to try to get good outcomes. And the master site is not approved, as far as I know, at this stage. However, there will be speculators all the time looking at once the idea of a redeveloped big market comes out, they'll start coming to the market. Look what happened at Fisherman's Bend. A lot of them went in and a lot of them got burnt when the final Fisherman's Bend structure plan came out. So the sooner that we move this forward and the sooner everything has become clear, we can probably stop a lot of that happening. On the other point of criticism that's been directed at the City of Melbourne sometimes about its consultation process, that we do it and then we take no action. All I can say is from what I've seen over the last 4 years, the City of Melbourne does undertake wide consultations, get inputs from hundreds of people, but we do not do everything that everybody wants because a lot of the inputs may not fit the strategy of our objectives, so we can't just do everything. And then to come and accuse us of not doing anything, I sometimes think it's a bit rich. So the council will do what is necessary to continue to meet its strategy. And I just want to make a point. And people can criticise council and councillors, but in the end, we have to deliver the results.
Any other speakers? Councillor Pender-Mortimer.
I'd just like to say that I recently visited markets in Barcelona, London and Milan. And the Queen Victoria Market precinct in your program is one that certainly matches, if not surpasses, what has been undertaken before. In addition, the consultation program, it's a comprehensive consultation program. And I really commend management and support the recommendations from what I've seen engaged.
Councillor Oak.
Just briefly, thank you, Chair. Tonight we're endorsing a governance framework as well as a conceptual framework for further consultation. And as the Lord Mayor has alluded to, it does seem quite complex and complicated, the framework that we're endorsing, but so is the market. And in order to get it right, it does, I guess, need to be as complicated or as complex as that diagram shows. And it does show that we are taking it seriously in terms of including all of the stakeholders in the conversation. I note that not only in the submissions that we've received, but also heard from tonight,
People are wanting more detail of what it is actually being proposed, and tonight the conceptual framework is very high level, but a lot of that fine level detail that has been captured in the first consultation process, and I guess just want to emphasise that even though the conceptual framework is still at that high level, the smaller details and information that's coming in through emails and through other submission processes is incredibly important, and I assume we're documenting it all, because some of the ideas and comments that are coming through the process already, whilst they seem quite fine-grained and micro-level, are incredibly important to how the market will end up being planned in the future.
Would anyone not like to speak?
Okay, Councillor Levitt, would you like to speak?
Thanks, Chair. Just briefly, I am entitled to, so I will. Tonight, as Councillor said, is about the governance structure. I think whilst it is complicated, it's the perception, it is very transparent that we're putting it out there. This is going to be a complicated process, but I think that we do need to acknowledge that we're being very transparent in describing how the final proposals to build X, Y, or Z are going to be made to the council. So tonight is all about... it's perfectly legitimate that we've got criticisms or concerns about consultation processes raised tonight, and we shouldn't be afraid of that. Four of the five things we're being asked to do tonight is just noting things that are happening. These are things that we set in train in 2013, but the only thing we're actually endorsing tonight is the governance framework. We could reach in and not note certain things and change things, but of course we're not going to do that today, because it should be immediately apparent to the reader of the report that's gone up tonight that the detailed level of consultation hasn't started yet. We started with the high level consultation, and we're going down to the detailed level of consultation next. Now, if there ever is a proposal before council to build a car park under the A, B and C sheds, certainly that hasn't come to us yet, and so tonight's not the time to knock that in or knock that out. I've got my own personal views about that, but I'm not going to raise them now, because the consultation period on the details hasn't happened yet. So restricting my comments now just to the governance framework, I think the work that's gone into that is quite good. I think we do need a level of detail and a level of complexity there, given the size of this renewal project. I think the description of the roles of the QVM Renewal Project Advisory Committee and the QVM Renewal Project Steering Group are the most relevant things that listeners to the debate should have a look at, or that the reader should have a look at, because it encapsulates how proposals are going to be made and put and potentially agreed to as to what we're actually going to do in the precinct. We haven't made any specific decisions yet, and that's going to be some time to come. So I endorse this entire motion.
Would anyone else like to speak? Put it to the vote. Oh, sorry, Lord Mayor, would you like to close? All those in favour? Any against? Clear that, carried unanimously. Lord Mayor, the Chair is yours to take us to the finish line.
Thank you. This concludes the reports from management to be considered. There are no items of general business. I wish to move that the issue of funding for Sunday's rally in Enterprise Park meets the requirements of an urgent business item, as it has arisen since the distribution of the agenda. Thank you. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Could I move the motion on the screen that the Future Melbourne Committee approves funding of up to $2,000 from the discretionary fund for the Salvation Army for costs associated with the rally for Wayne Mousepierre on Sunday, the 16th of February. Is that seconded?
Yes.
Councillor Foster, thank you. Briefly, and I'm sorry, councillors, to bring this to you at such late notice. The Salvation Army raised this with me yesterday. They have organised a rally for Wayne Mousepierre on this Sunday, and it has grown quite remarkably. They ask us for support of a fairly modest amount, up to $2,000, towards the costs of the PA equipment, the staging in particular, some catering, some organisational elements as well. It's been organised by the Salvation Army's Major Brendan Nottle, and I think it is a very worthy thing to support, and I would encourage councillors to attend if they can. And I think this is a small gesture from us to help them to mark a very sombre moment in our city's history. Councillor Foster.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Just briefly, I'm very much in favour and very much in support of the Lord Mayor having moved this as an item of urgent business today, and appreciate the fact that the Salvation Army saw fit to come forward and request the money for this. It's important to continue drawing public attention to this important issue, and I think this goes a long way to doing just that. Losing momentum at this stage can allow the wheels to fall off a number of really good ideas and really good initiatives. So I'm very hopeful that with the support of councillors, this will continue to keep homelessness at the forefront of the public mind and indeed take us forward to creating some better and more useful solutions to the issue.
Thank you, Councillor Foster. Is there a speaker against the motion? Is there a further speaker for the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Thank you. This concludes, unless there's another item of urgent business from us. We now provide a 15-minute period for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. I invite questions from members of the public. If you raise your hand and state your full name, please. Thank you.
Good evening, councillors. Thank you for having me back. For those who weren't around, my name's Dan Toomey. I'm from the Royal Park Reds, so I hope I can provide as enlightening a time as I did last time, Councillor Main. This week we've had bomb sites, bush rangers, blank checks and a bra. So if it keeps going like this, I think I'll be back every week. It seems that at the Reds here this week, the bomb sites and bush lawyers is a bit of what we've been about the last 8 weeks. It's been fairly trying for us. I'd just like to ask the councillors given the lack of consultation with the only residents of Poplar Oval, the Royal Park Reds Cricket Club, and given Cricket Victoria's agreement recently to consider options for further turf wickets on Princes Park, can the City of Melbourne now illustrate any plans for providing a home for the Royal Park Reds Cricket Club beyond the 2016-2017 season?
I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I think you take us a bit too far out at 16-17. I mean, we're very happy to continue talking to you, and I hope we've resolved the difficulties with not talking to the club earlier. I understand, and we've been briefed today on your reservations about sort of a double move and the necessity to find an ongoing home, you know, with appropriate pavilion facilities. I'm not saying yes or no, and I'm happy to invite other councillors to comment, but I think what I would prefer to do, given that we don't even, my understanding is we don't even need to consider the first move for you if we had to make two moves for 2 or 3 years yet. So we're happy to continue talking to you. We're happy to continue to explore options. We want a fallback position if all else fails. But if we can find a more optimal solution for you, we'd be keen to do it. And that's not probably as specific as you want. But we understand the concerns you've raised with us. We hope that the ongoing dialogue is productive in getting what the club wants. But I don't think I can answer for what's going to happen in 2017.
Would you be happy with a refinement?
Would
you be happy with a refinement on this question?
A refinement? You want to add something else?
A refinement on question, just to specify. Can you provide an update on potential redevelopment of plans going forward, considering the tender process is going through at such short notice, or it's in such short time frame?
Could I suggest we connect you with our officers to do that? Because, you know, if you're unhappy with the process, by all means come to us. But I don't think we have the individual specific expertise about the quite detailed questions you will want answered in order to do that. I think we're very happy to commit to a very specific conversation with our officers about your concerns and a continuing report back to us. Will that do in the interim? Because that you can keep on coming back and asking if it's not satisfactory or you're not satisfied with it, but I don't think we have the specific ground, you know, issue knowledge to be able to answer your questions here.
I understand.
Sorry, Councillor Oak.
I don't know if this is useful, but because I understand you had the conversations with Cricket Victoria.
We did, yes.
Yesterday.
Yes, a very positive meeting.
I understand that they've only very recently then spoken to officers. So I guess reiterating the Lord Mayor's comments that the meetings or the discussions around your proposal of three turf wickets on at Princes Park versus the two and not being having to move is only very new information, and I think the Lord Mayor is right that the officers probably need to go back to you
after their conversations with, is it Cricket Victoria?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is difficult for us because we know quite properly your focus is the Reds, and so it should be. But for us, it's quite a large patchwork quilt. And so as part of that briefing, we kind of need you to know the other imperatives that we're working with and what's possible and what's not. But we certainly give you the commitment that, as Councillor Oak said, the most recent advice to us and your input, we're very happy to take on board as you continue your discussion with officers. You're always welcome back here if you're unhappy with progress.
Like I say, I might be back next week if it keeps going this way.
That's okay. We'll be here.
I'm sure you will be.
We're not here next week. Don't come next week.
Oh, don't worry. I'll find something else to do with my time. Thank you so much for your support. Are we able to continue moving on from this meeting that I understand has happened today? Are the Reds able to continue meeting with your officers in a fairly direct fashion? Because
Absolutely.
We are concerned very much about the timeline on tenders being signed.
In fact, we can probably even nominate the officer with whom you should meet. Can someone tell me that?
It's Graham Porteous.
Graham Porteous, yes. Yeah. Familiar with Graham?
Yeah. Of course.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And the CEO will correct me if I'm wrong, but there are no meetings between now and the 25th of Feb, which is the deadline for the first package of tenders, and that's been made public now. That was made public last Wednesday night. The second round of tender documents is going to be in the future, but given that there are no council or committee meetings between now and the 25th, if what you're actually asking is a rethink of what's being tendered, then at this stage, that the only way that that can happen is under delegation. And so, CEO will correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Correct.
Rob.
Yeah. Rob.
Clarification for you, Lord Mayor.
Yeah.
The tender has to come back to you because it will be over our delegation.
So there's another fail-safe. My strong advice is, I go back to my start, if you wouldn't mind continuing those discussions with Graham, we hope we can resolve it that way. Our officers are focused on it and have briefed us as recently as today. You're welcome to come back here and report progress or lack of it to us. We hope we'll get a satisfactory resolution, but we want you to understand that patchwork quilt that we're dealing with.
We understand it very well. We look forward to seeing you all at Ladies Day this Saturday, every time from 3 at Poplar Oval.
Please, no unpaid advertisements here.
Not at all. I was trying to buy you a beer, but anyway.
Thank you.
We'll see you later on.
Thank you. Anthony.
Mr. Lord Mayor, in 1995-96, the City of Melbourne engaged Meredith Gould to produce a proposed document for the listing of the Royal Exhibition Buildings for World Heritage. This proposal, unfortunately, was rejected by the Kennett government, but later endorsed by the Brax Labor government. Is the City Council still pursuing the notion of the proposed listing of the Queen Victoria Market site? And if so, when and will it be presenting a similar document to that produced by Meredith Gould in respect to the Royal Exhibition Buildings?
I can answer that. It is at an informal stage. We've listed it as an aspirational element of what we want to do. I have had very preliminary informal discussions with the federal minister whose carriage it is, not a state minister.
I'm well aware of the process.
The federal minister, who has made some suggestions about national listing in preparation for World Heritage listing. Until we're at a stage where we actually know what we're going to propose, it's difficult to frame any sort of document that could say this is what we're going to do.
Well, that was my point of the question is, when would the City of Melbourne engage a similar person such as Meredith Gould or a heritage architect to analyse the merits of the proposal, which is the first step towards World Heritage listing? I know this because I went through this process over the Royal Exhibition Buildings, which, as I said previously, regretfully, the Kennett government, of which you were a member of, rejected the proposal at the time. It is one of the owners of the site. It has a responsibility to put forward the proposal for World Heritage listing to the federal government, who in turn invokes the convention under UNESCO provisions. However, the City of Melbourne, in this case, is the owner of Queen Victoria Hospital, Queen Victoria Market site. My concern is that the council has not yet produced the relevant documents, and I want to know when and why it hasn't started on the heritage aspect of the proposed development before it even puts it to the federal government.
I do find it, I might say, a little exasperating that in one submission to us you excoriate us for moving too quickly, and in the very next one you excoriate us for moving too slowly.
I'm talking about preparing a document that outlines the merits of a World Heritage listing.
I understand what
you're talking about. Development of the site. The development of the site comes second after the World Heritage listing has been adopted. You don't go and redevelop the site and then apply for World Heritage. And that was the mistake the state government made over the museum and the Royal Exhibition buildings development.
Thank you.
I'm sure Rob Adams remembers it well.
Thank you. I wish to thank members. Oh, anybody else like to ask us a question? Beratus? In that case, could I thank members of the public and management for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 7:55. 7:55, that's right.